Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I'm not an expert in anything after the football season because you know what? I care about opening day. I go watch a lot of baseball. Time to relax. Time to get away. And I love my job. Absolutely love my job. But I don't want to do it 12 months a year. And I don't know that America is crying out on February 26th to see Birmingham against Provo. Or I don't even know the teams in the league.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Thank you, Peter. Liz is here today. Jeannie is here today. We have plenty of things to talk about. They are off the sports beat to a degree. I hold in my hand, ladies, something called Plexiderm. Do you know what Plexiderm is?
No.
Okay.
Will it make me look younger?
Yes.
Okay.
Will it fix my eyes?
Yes. Plexiderm, if you have 70-plus-year-old eyes, you have tremendous bags under your eyes, unless you've done the smart thing and had surgery. And I pretty much look like a raccoon. So Bonnie, of course, Bonnie went out and got Plexiderm. Plexiderm was, they began to advertise it about 3 or 4 years ago. You take an old man, you rub it under his eyes, you wait 10 minutes.
I've seen those.
You wait 10 minutes and it works. Now the problem.
Is this OTC?
Huh?
Is this OTC?
Over the counter?
Yes. Yeah, the problem with Plexiderm, rapid reduction serum, visibly reduces under eye bags and wrinkles. I've used this the last 3 or 4 days. Carol puts it on and then you sit and you wait and you feel something grabbing underneath your eyes.
Yeah, the skin tightens.
Skin tighteners. Now, it turns out, I remember talking to Renee when Renee was doing makeup when I was going to the office. Mm-hmm. And I asked about Plexiderm. I said, should I get it? And she says it's hemorrhoid cream.
Yeah, that's what the people used to just use hemorrhoid
cream. It's hemorrhoid cream.
But yeah. It's hard to say I
How
put hemorrhoid cream.
Hemorrhoid
this?
Cream, yeah. So now the problem with this is, if on this label there was a sentence that said, use this more than 3 days in a row and you're going to die, because it is marketed to people over the age of 50 or 60 or 70,
yes.
They can't read this small print. So you've never used it? I've used it.
Or what if it said you could also put this on your hemorrhoids?
Well, in case, in a pinch. You can do that.
A dessert topping as
but
well.
That's, yes. Okay.
Find that out
but
accidentally.
All right. What is Viagra? Viagra was originally designed and invented as a heart.
That's right.
It made your heart work better or your blood pressure. Yeah, it was not for what it turned out to be.
But not to shrink the skin.
God help us if Viagra was going to do that. No, not to shrink the skin. No. But Plexiderm, so you're not. Okay,
can
so.
Can I read this label?
Yeah.
I'm so suspicious.
I literally am not.
You don't know it? Okay, so let me get to another product that's in the news, like in the great commercial. Aunt Joni's here. Expired.
I love that commercial.
Everybody loves that commercial.
I love that.
So the New York Times had a story the other day of 15 foods that never expire, basically. Never expire, even when the date says, best used before X. Like they said, honey will never expire. Don't worry about honey. They said eggs, months, 5-6 months. Don't worry about this. Yeah. If they smell bad, that's different. But there was a bunch of things that, because I know, because you were the food editor, so this is probably an important story to you, what expires and what doesn't, and the Times was saying that a lot of things don't.
And I hardly ever paid attention to the use-by dates. I mean, when you have like a can of like good Italian tomatoes.
It lasts years.
Lasts for years.
They actually said it lasts years.
If the can starts to buckle, then you're in trouble.
Right.
Okay?
But Michael is one of those people. You're a strictist. I'm strict constructionist on expiration dates.
So let's unpack
this.
You
yelled at me about my chicken salad.
You brought a container of chicken salad. This is already cooked chicken that has been mixed with mayonnaise and other seasonings.
Mayonnaise is key here.
Yeah. Okay, so once you've opened this, I would say trust your nose. And normally, maybe after, 5 days, you might notice it begins to smell a little bit different. Mm. You were going on 2 weeks plus with this chicken salad.
No, as you
leave to go to the gym, you just stick 2 fingers in and take a little scoop out and say protein.
Yeah.
No.
I am a freak about expiration dates.
Well, maybe you're shortchanging yourself.
Well, I probably am. But no. I used to manage a grocery store.
Really?
And, So as a shopper today.
Take a 20. What?
No. I mean, this was like, it's a, what do you call it? A co-op grocery store in college. But, you know, I was a manager. And then today when I shop, I'm really annoying. I mean, I have to like take stock from the back because if you stock properly, you put the most removed dates in the back, so I only shop from the back of every item. Yes, and I used to purge my mother's refrigerator every time I visited.
Well,
her.
you should
that was
look
really
the story
annoying.
Up in the Times.
Yes,
I mean,
but
it
I wouldn't
20
even
things.
Believe the story in the you know.
Really?
I'm that much of a freak about expiration dates. Okay.
I mean, do you cut the mold off cheese and then just use the cheese?
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
in my
me
life.
Too. I do that all the time. There's nothing wrong
life.
With that.
There now, I won't do that with bread. The bread goes out.
Oh, I'll do
it. But I'll
bread.
Try to find a slice that's not touching the mold slice and try and use that in anticipation of it going bad in a day. Yeah, but I mean, I've lived this long.
Same here.
And I've eaten this chicken salad for a long time.
It's only made you stronger, which is always what amazes us. Now, the bread, some of the bread you try and see if it'll spoil, and the stuff is so shelf stable, you can go away for weeks and you come back, it feels the same.
That's right.
So I've had a cold for over 2 weeks, a cough and a cold. I have tested resolutely, and I'm negative. I always test because Gene was positive, and I didn't want Gene to have to.
It was before Christmas,
right? So it's a long time ago.
Now,
so I've been.
And by tested, you made Nigel test you.
Well, I have a story for in the middle of the night, in the middle of this night, as Billy Joel would sing, in the middle of the night. I go walking in my sleep. So I started coughing and sneezing at about 12:30 in the morning. I woke up and I'm coughing and I'm sneezing, and it had been going gradually away. And I was like right at the end of it, I felt, yesterday. And then this happened. And then I began to panic. And at 3:30 in the morning, I said to Carol, I need to take a COVID test, which means you need to give me one because I don't know how to take a COVID
test. You don't know how.
No, I don't know how. Either Nigel
gives it to me.
It's
like he doesn't know how to turn on the computer.
I don't know how.
Or get money out of an ATM. Why am I surprised?
No, don't know how to. Don't want to know. A lot of things I don't want to know. So I took a COVID test, convinced that I had COVID, sneezing when I don't. And I don't again. Like, you run, at some point, you run out of luck, right? How many times do you think you've tested yourself?
Oh, God, 20.
How many times do you think you've tested yourself?
I've only tested three times at my house, but at the post, we're tested once a week. So, like, lots.
Oh,
lots.
You still are?
Yeah, yeah.
How many
I
times?
Have never had COVID,
right.
By the way.
How many
probably
times?
North of your numbers, just because also with the under three crowd, if they looked like they might have had symptoms, we tested ourselves, assuming if we had it, then they probably had it as well, because there's nothing worse than trying to stick a nasal swab up a 3.5-year-old's nose.
Yeah, that's hard.
But what's interesting is when I did test positive, it was, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night shivering, you know, all those symptoms. But I knew, I woke up and I said, I know I this feels different and I have to test.
Oh.
So one of the things that I was smelling this morning was something you told me.
Mm-hmm.
I was smelling, I thought, was something burning in the house?
Sign. An electrical
something.
Fire.
Yeah, but it was very faint. Fire. But I thought of you immediately, and it was at that moment that I said, I'm waking Carol up to take a test. She was not happy.
Maybe
she's
I just
going to
planted
sleep till
that
11.
Idea in your head.
Well, you did. It worked.
Yeah.
Story in the paper the other day. I'd like to read this out loud. Strasburg, the 2019 World Series MVP and the team's most expensive player, suffered a setback in his recovery from 2021 surgery. Hello, 2021 surgery for thoracic outlet syndrome, which nobody understands. According to manager Dave Martinez, the right-hander experienced discomfort following a recent bullpen session. Martinez declined to specify when the session occurred and will remain in Washington for right now. Quote from Martinez, I know in his heart he wants to pitch. I know the fans want to see him pitch again, but at this point, it's just health-related, and it's the same thing. It's the nerve that's bothered him. I know he's going to get checked out by some doctors again, so we'll see. He's never pitching again.
No.
Never. It's a $245 million contract. It is now in the running for the worst contract ever made by a team to a player. Am I right?
Asterisk the World Series.
MVP. I know. So this is why I'm not angry.
Okay.
It's why I'm not angry, because he won the World Series. I understand that. But he's never going to pitch again.
I'm pretty sure
like
you're
right. Like the enduring visual of Steven Strasburg is looking down at his right arm and looking into the dugout for the trainer.
Oh, we know that look.
As he walks off the mound.
He's not pitching again.
No. So
and
as soon as
not,
you hear
he's not 25
the
now.
Title of that surgery, you knew it would be this bad, and you wondered, you know, this is related to seeing Tiger Riviera. You wonder, is he going to pitch again? I don't think he will.
No.
But it's impossible to separate this from the owners who are trying to unload this team, and you look at this is like you overpaid for a premium real estate location, and then all of a sudden the world shifts, no one wants to go downtown anymore, and now you're sitting with that sunk cost.
I don't blame anybody for this. I'm just saying it's going to turn out to be the worst contract of all time. He's pitched like 40 innings. That's all. That's it. 40 innings. He's not going out there again.
How old was he his rookie year? Was he 19, 20?
No, Harper was that young.
Pitchers are usually a little older.
Strasburg was in his early 20s, I believe. He was an overall number one pick, as was Harper. But Harper got up earlier. Or maybe not.
21.
His rookie year. Okay,
so what is he now, 35?
Let's see. I think he's 34.
It's over.
I think of that first game he
pitched, sure.
Which was just spectacular.
Sure.
And clearly he wanted to live up to every expectation. What was it, 13 strikeouts, 14 strikeouts? I can't remember. But I just wonder if going for that kind of thing that young just burned out an arm too early.
He never had Tommy John.
No.
He never had that. This thoracic thing isn't that in his neck?
I think it's related to that, nerve.
Right. Like it's not the S1, which I've got from your back, but it probably on the bridge of your neck.
But even versus
shoulders.
Tommy John, it's not like a simple break
that
you might
curable.
Have another, another sport. You say, here's your timeline, you're back, you're good.
It's clear that Strasburg's is not curable. It's just not curable. Every time he goes out, this happens. Every time.
Can I just say, I'm always glad when athletes get paid. I'm always on the side of labor versus management, so yay. But this story just appalls me because of NFL players. That's who I'm thinking of. The fact that their contracts are not guaranteed. I mean, there's nothing
some are,
analogous.
But only quarterbacks.
It's very, very rare.
And Von
rare.
Miller. Yeah,
you know,
it's very rare.
The numbers thrown around are just fake numbers. You know, they don't, it's super rare.
Well,
it's super rare.
The bonus that they give you is not fake.
Yeah, but the
and you can get $50, $60 million on bonuses.
Yeah, for some players.
Yeah, but, for star
but
players.
But for a lot of players whose careers might be 3-4 years,
I mean,
they have more than a pinched nerve left, you know, for the rest of their lives.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. Their bodies are very differently destroyed than baseball player bodies.
You know, they're not fully guaranteed like baseball players. So I'm not downing baseball
and
players.
And I do think Strasburg stayed with the Nats because of the way they, and Scott Boras appreciated this, because of the way the team had recognized Strasburg's injury, had not tried to force him back too soon as much as they needed him. So at the time, it seemed like a good thing that the Nats approached
sure,
him.
Sure, but I would suggest that maybe Scott Boras, who may or may not be the devil, was aware that no other team would enter into a contract like that with him at that
is
point.
That right?
Because they would have medical questions about him. I mean, you just saw this with Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
Like, you take a physical, and all of a sudden, the richest team in baseball, or one of the Mets, says, ooh, we're away from this. We're not going to get involved in this. So I also want to talk. There's two other things I want to talk about in the open. The things that we are shooting down.
Oh,
yes. The balloons that we are shooting down.
Yes.
On almost a daily basis.
Not for 4 days, I think.
What do you think about the guy who missed? What do you think about the guy who missed the balloon over Lake Huron? What do you think about that?
Maybe perhaps a desk job? Perhaps put him in the booth?
So I pass by, because everybody in Washington passes by somebody's house who's famous and needs Secret Service protection. And I pass by a house like this, and and these are Secret Service guys. And I was talking to them, and they went, ooh, about the guy who missed. And first of all, the general said it fell harmlessly into Lake Huron. What if it didn't?
Yes.
What if it skirted Lake Huron and fell harmfully into a bunch of houses, you know, in Wisconsin or Michigan or something like that? These, if they are indeed balloons, if they're UFOs, okay, I'm going to back off what I'm saying. Everyone says they're not UFOs. If they are UFOs, I back away. But these things are not taking evasive measures. You went probably to the Air Force Academy or the Naval Academy. You then went into flight school. You're the top gun. You're it. You're the number one stunner, as they used to say. And you missed. What are your friends saying to you? Like, what are your other guys in flight school saying to you when they find out you missed? Aren't you supposed to make that one? Isn't that a layup?
It's like the field goal kicker. I guess, you know, you got to win the game,
big guy. But it's a field goal kicker
guy.
From 20, not from 50.
Right. Yeah, you missed the decimal point.
That's right.
You're supposed to make that. Ooh.
It's a tough one to say, like, my bad. You know, it's pretty.
Are you bothered by the fact that we're shooting down things on a regular basis?
You know, I will...
That we think have been up there for, like, I don't know, 20 years?
I'll tell you what bothers me, and I'm going to sound like a finger-wagging person, but that's really who I am. I am really bothered that we are not this exercised about shooting down college students and elementary school students. I mean, the gun pox, humans against humans, concerns me far, far more than balloons, even if they are E.T. or E.T.'s family. I really do not care. And the whole surveillance thing, I'm not sure that's the sole means of surveillance in our globe. So I don't see it as an existential threat. I am really upset about shooting, but on the human level.
If we are good enough to build the stuff that we build, we know what they're getting. We can jam their signals, or we can just intercept everything that they're... We know all of that stuff. But we'd never... You can't tell me this is the first time these things have been up there.
Well, the thing that bothers me about the story, though I very much appreciate Liz's perspective on this, but the one thing that bothers me is that these most recent three objects that were shot down were discovered only because they amped up the volume on their detection. Like they added a filter.
Right.
Oh, like the metal detector at the airport.
Yeah, so like all of a sudden, find three things.
Right.
Well, what if you had done that 6 months ago? You know, what have you missed?
But was there not awareness of a specific Chinese spy balloon under Trump?
I don't know.
I believe
they said that,
but he didn't shoot it down.
Correct.
What
I
did
think
he
they
do?
Said that they
did. Did he try to build a condo on it? What did he do?
I think they said that administration was unaware that this had happened.
Oh,
but
okay.
We're unaware.
I always defer to Gene.
Well, if you go to what this also happened to me the other day, I have this bad compressed nerve in my back, and as a result of that, it was recommended to me by the surgeons who I talked to that I try to take the steroid shots.
Ooh.
It's very common.
Yes.
Everybody does this when they have some sort of problem.
You like cortisone?
Cortisone
yeah.
shots.
Mm-hmm.
Cortisone
yes.
shots. Yeah. You've taken these in your life?
Yeah, three. But your
Did
story.
They work for
Go
you?
Right ahead. To a point that it scared me to death. I mean, my acute
you're so
pain
lucky.
Was totally gone.
Oh.
But it's really bad if you're a diabetic because it interferes with your...
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I
don't do it anymore.
But I took three different shots, and they didn't... To my knowledge, they may have worked marginally, but I didn't have the miracle get up from the table. And I know people who've had...
Oh, yeah.
I got up from the table, and it was gone. The pain was gone, all gone. Crippling pain, all gone.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people who've had that. Didn't happen for me. But this is more to this point that I'm trying to make. I got recommended by my doctors to take this shot, and they said, here's a guy to go to. I did it, right? I happily did it. The same thing as if I had this happen to me the other week too. Your crown breaks in half, you go to the dentist. Okay, you go to the dentist. You go to your dentist. You probably don't know how much it's going to cost. You really don't. I mean, you might know how much a quart of chicken salad from Columbia costs, but you're not going to know how much a cortisone shot. You're not going to know how much
That's
it costs.
That's correct.
So I got a bill, and I saw, and I'm not going to discuss specifics, but it was seemed to me a high amount. And I just thought, you don't price these. You would not do this if you were buying shades. Would not do it. You'd go to the first shade company. You'd go to the second shade company. You might go to a third. You would not if you're getting your house uplit. You would not go to just one person because you'd think, well, it's, you know, and yet we do this in medicine all the time. All the time. You don't price it out.
Sure.
I asked, are these priced? I just said, I don't know the price. Is it high? Is it medium? Is it low? I had no idea. And I wouldn't have, I wouldn't have gone somewhere else. Well, you're looking at me.
Well, there is some sort of a new directive that I have gotten from at least one doctor and then at my eye doctor as well. At the beginning of the year, one of my doctors sent me this sort of formal letter saying, this is what we charge for this. Oh. This is what we charge for this. This is what we charge for this.
I've never gotten a letter like that.
Just started. And then I went to my eye doctor recently, and when I checked in, I was just going for an annual exam.
You didn't go pick up any Plexiderm while you were there.
I did not. I did not. I'm not going to put that stuff on my eyes. I checked in. The woman at the desk said, this is such and such charge for the annual exam, which insurance, I think, covers most of. But if we have to write you a prescription, there's a this dollar charge. Yes.
Just for the written prescription?
Because then they take the exam a step further. Then they realize that perhaps you need a corrective lens somewhere. Okay. So they have to take the exam a step further, which results in a prescription.
Would you price out glasses?
Oh, sure.
You would do that. You would price out glasses.
Sure.
Would you price out, not a regular exam, you have your doctor that you trust, so you wouldn't necessarily do that. But if you got sent from your doctor or your dentist to a specialist because you needed something, would you price that out?
No.
I would not. I have not. I have not done that. And so when I got the bill, I went, oh.
You're never this trusting.
I am.
So with, I think when you zoom out from this, I would look at it saying there's a difference between getting a prescription for something, whether it's, your topical or even something you might have to take once a day, twice a day, versus seeing a specialist for a procedure. And this shot sort of seems like it's in between both of those areas because it's a one and done type thing. But I'm always wondering, like, oh, is this doctor getting a kickback or is there a special relationship with this new, I think about with seeing allergists. There's a new, steroid nasal spray on the market. Or do they want to test it out? And what are they getting from this?
I think being an informed consumer on medical matters is kind of a generational thing. It's appropriate.
Yes.
But I think there's, my dad, like traditionally, you price out all things. I mean, you're a good steward of your money, but in anything in the category of medicine or healthcare, there's this traditional deference, like, well, I don't know. And their job is to help me. And they would always do the right thing. And they're experts. And I'm not, you wouldn't question or even say why this treatment is necessary. Can it wait? You wouldn't even do that, much less, is this the best value for my money?
Yeah.
And I think this awakening of patients have rights and physicians are not in this special category above questioning is a new thing.
Yeah.
I mean, just my.
I'm of a generation that total trust
and
on
our
these
parents.
Things. Yeah, by the way, it's always worked out.
Our parents were unquestioning.
Oh, yeah, my God, yeah.
I would say that if you go for a medical procedure and it turns out in a van or a motel,
that's probably
you probably want to do a price check.
I draw the line if the doctors live on Rockwood Parkway. I go, wow, they're
really making money. First showed me the bill for the shot, my first question to you was, all right, what's your, when you go to your insurance marketplace, what does your plan look like? Your PPO, HMO, all these choices. You have no idea.
You've never selected. No, I never selected a plan.
You didn't? It's a hard decision.
Cigna. Calculated indifference gives no aid. We'll take a break. We'll come back with everybody. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are Jackie and the Treehorns. This comes from Brian Gibson in Columbia, Maryland. I'm a longtime Little and drummer for the D.C. area rock band Jackie and the Treehorns. We're proud to submit two songs from our latest album, Go Get Your Ghosts, for the podcast. We hope you'll be kind enough to share them with your listeners. The first track is Voyage. It's a story about being lost at sea, abandoned with nowhere to go, and the slow mental breakdown that ensues. So it's an uplifting song. That's an uplifting song. Voyage. Jackie and the Treehorns. You laughed when I said Jackie and the Treehorns.
I was thinking of my tennis shoes from high school.
Oh, Treehorns.
Treehorns.
Yeah. So, yeah. I was giggling about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Ridiculously.
All right. Sorry. So we're going to draw on your many years of covering auto racing, because the Daytona 500, which is, to my knowledge, the most important race in NASCAR, goes this weekend. And it's not only the most important race, but unlike every other sport, which the most important thing is either at the end or near the end, it's first.
Yeah.
It's the first one. How many in the resume of my sports writing career, that's one I missed. Now, yeah. I've been to NASCAR races.
Yes.
But that's one I've missed.
Yes.
You've done it a bunch.
Yes.
Makes it a big deal?
Well, there is that, you know, giant cymbal clash to start the season with the biggest event. So it's just in the air. I mean, and I'm hearkening back in the day when NASCAR was just going gangbusters. So there was this great electricity, and you know, there's a 36 race season, but almost the whole off season is devoted to getting the best car for Daytona.
You know,
it's so disproportionately important to the teams. It's just huge, the tradition. But to go there to sit in it's one of those things. If you're on the ground, you drive in the infield in your car, you park in the media lot, you walk around. You have no sense of the scale. You have no sense of it because it's just so vast. You have to get in the press box above the stands overlooking, like you do with football fields. But this is so much bigger. I want to say it's like 6 or 8 football fields, the equivalent. It's 2.5 miles around. It's so huge. There's a lake in it. You know, it's filled with RVs.
Can you see all of it from the press box?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just breathtaking. And then you see literally how close the cars run together at almost 200 miles an hour. Oh. It just will take your breath. It's astounding. And then, so different vantage points, you appreciate it at a different level. If you're in the infield and, you know, on pit road or standing in turn one, just the sound is unlike anything else. This, like, you know, that'll go away with hybrid engines, you know, ultimately. But the, it's such a throaty, totally different than IndyCar or F1 sound. It's and it's noxious. It's just so visceral. It's thrilling. I have to say, it's thrilling. Yes.
Can you be considered a great NASCAR driver if you have not won the Daytona 500?
Yes. Yes, you can. But it's one of those holes on your resume that is a pity. I mean, the great Dale Earnhardt, the late Dale Earnhardt, I want to say he failed to win it 20 times. I could be off by one or two.
Was that where he died? Was that the race?
That is where he
died. Daytona, right?
But the irony, I mean, so many ironies, so many tragedies there. He was the master of racing at Daytona. It takes a special quality of understanding the aerodynamic draft to not only race at Daytona, but to win at Daytona, to know like when to time the pass you have to have. He was the best at it. But year after year, he was just snake bitten by freakish things like a pigeon or what do you call the birds by the water? Seagull.
Pelicans,
yeah. Sorry. Yeah. A seagull like ran into his car one time or, you know, just weird things. So when he finally won it, I covered that race. It was 98. It was just the most amazing thing. Now, he had at that point, I believe, 7 championships. He didn't need any further validation.
That's
only
right.
3 men in history have won 7 championships. I mean, he was the alpha of alphas, the god. You know, some saw him as the Antichrist, but you know, he was the biggest, baddest ass. But that really gnawed at him. He hadn't won the Daytona 500.
You said off air you had driven around in regular cars with him.
Oh, yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, it was really fun. Really fun. And this is back in the day when I was covering racing full time. and would do a special profile of him, once for the Charlotte Observer, once for Dallas Morning News, once for the Post. But, you know, I got to know him over time. And when I would need an interview, need time, it would just be like, come out to the farm and we'll talk. We'll do the interview there. And he was very proud of his farm and the land he had. And we'd really just like hop in his truck and ride around the property. And he would talk. I think kind of like, you know how Bruce Springsteen is most comfortable
with a guitar
with a guitar in his hand doing the Stern interview, like he it's yes. like, and I really think Dale, it's like to be behind the wheel. I mean, the interview wouldn't have worked had I been driving and he was in the passenger car. First of all, that would never ever have happened in his lifetime. But I just think it was like his security blanket. I'm in charge, I'm behind the wheel, you know. And he was so open and so expansive. I mean, actually, the first time I spent a full day with him, I had to meet him at his farm at like 7:30 in the morning because we were going to drive to North Wilkesboro Speedway, no longer in use, and he was going to qualify the car, and I was going to shadow him the whole day, and then we were going to drive back to the farm. And so I had to meet him at 7:30. I went in. He offered me a Sun Drop soda and a chicken biscuit like for breakfast. And then we get in the truck, and before we set out, like, I didn't use my seatbelt, and he's like, we're not going until you put on your seatbelt. So I put on my seatbelt, and they were back roads you mainly took to North Wilkesboro, and it's just the pain in the ass tailgate. Is that what you call it? It's not tailgating. What's the word when you're on somebody's bumper?
Tailgating.
Okay, I'm confusing my football chicken wing tailgating. But that, I mean, he was an obnoxious, aggressive driver.
Really can't imagine.
No, he was. And then, like, the lines that say, like, you can pass here, not there, it did not matter what the line said. I mean, just so it was very fun, very funny.
So you covered, you mentioned before Formula One, and you mentioned before IndyCar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer, of these three, is there one you prefer, and is there a reason you prefer it?
Oh, boy, this is so interesting. So I've only covered one IndyCar race in my life, and that was one, the rare ones, that it was at Indy, in the U.S., in the continental U.S.
Right.
And it was not a good experience, because Schumacher tried to rig the finish to have this photo finish, and so I was very disillusioned by that. Nonetheless, I mean, if I had a bucket list, it would be an F1 race at Monza to see the Ferraris run in Italy. And, you know, I'd love to see that, whether I'm just seeing it, hearing it, covering it. So that's kind of a big hole on my resume. I've never seen an F1 race overseas, and I'd most like to do that in Italy. I did not like covering drag racing, just because it will split your eardrums, and it's really automotive. I mean, the goal is to go in a straight line faster than anyone. And so it's just too much of a power blast. And I'm not that into horsepower.
Everybody's out on the street tonight on a last chance power drive.
Yeah, but the characters in NHRA are really fascinating. I mean, they're great, great.
Big Daddy Don Garlitz.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, John Force. And they're so open. So that's fun. But
your heart belongs to NASCAR.
To NASCAR, but I'll tell you, and again, this is I don't cover it much to speak of now, although I have a story running tomorrow or Sunday. I'm an American history major. You know, my parents are Southerners. I'm really not, you know, just because of where I grew up. But I'm very fascinated with the history of our country and the history of not so much the South, but the Scots-Irish immigrants who came and settled the East Coast and were very much against paying taxes, you know, were fiercely independent, full of valor. I mean, there's just a very interesting, the roots of stock car racing are a lot these people, and they made moonshine, and that is from what they brought with them.
And they had to drive fast. Mm-hmm.
They had to drive fast because they didn't want to pay taxes on their moonshine.
Right.
So, I mean, all that's my entry point for NASCAR, and that it's kind of a self-made, when it was regional. I mean, I sort of like food. I mean, I'm fascinated with anything regional, like, oh, you know, if you're into food.
A chicken biscuit. I've been thinking about one since you said it.
A chicken biscuit and a Sundrop soda, you know. But so I love, and I think that's going away in our country, but I love sports that are regional. And I think if I had worked at the Louisville Courier Journal, I might know about
horse racing,
you know, because you can't work there if you don't know about it. And my early newspapers were in North Carolina, and you needed to know.
So when I started to work in 1970, there were no women sports writers. There were absolutely none. But very quickly, within 71, 72, 73, there were women sports writers. Did you find at any time that because, boy, it seems to me that stock car racing is a real man's thing, man's thing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that were you treated in a way that you didn't expect when you started to cover that?
Totally, but not in the way you think.
A better way.
And it was the most welcoming sport. I just cannot tell you. From car owners, crew chiefs, mechanics, racers, again, back in the day. It's just the access remains unbelievable.
Yes. You can walk with them as they get in the car to start the race.
Yes. To this day, you know, not to mention like come over to my house, we'll do the interview, we'll drive around. And so it's I don't know that it's unique. I'm not sure it cuts along gender lines, but happily I don't think gender is a barrier, because the real thing is interest. If you have genuine interest in figuring out what I do and what a restrictor plate is and what the carburetor does, like, come over here. We'll look under the hood and I'll show you this and I'll explain this. And this is what tire wear is. And this is what a tire rub is and blah, 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 blah. It's like anything you want to know, someone will show you in NASCAR. And it's just, it's a thrill.
That's interesting. Because to me, when I visualize racing, auto racing.
Yeah.
What comes into my mind? Well, Paul LaMatte in American Graffiti. You know, there's a guy sitting in a car and there's his girlfriend, is over there hoping it'll go all right. Don't worry, baby.
Yeah.
Okay, that is to me,
that's
most sharply segregated by gender sport that I can even imagine. I don't know that.
No, this is also true.
So
this is also true. But I mean, so when I started covering racing, there was a Miss Winston. I mean, the beauty queen sponsored by RJR. Her whole job was to hand out cartons of cigarettes in the garage. She was gorgeous. She was always friendly. Everybody loved Miss Winston. And then there was always the trophy queen. There were, Linda Vaughn is like one of the most famous trophy, I hate to say trophy girls, but Tom Wolfe wrote a whole thing about Linda Vaughn. I love her. You know, so there were beauty queens. But that's a different category than female sports journalists.
Right.
You know, the journalists, you were required to wear, cover your arms, cover your legs, closed toed, what do you call it?
Shoes.
You know, that's all about fire.
Yeah.
So it's like working female journalists or working female PR people were respected for working hard. But no one would confuse me for Miss Winston. In other words, I just didn't have that look. And I really liked a lot of them.
Benson and Hedges. There
were some really lovely ones who are super smart and great at their job. And I wrote a magazine story about the death of Miss Winston, the death of the institution. So I'm a big fan of that. That's another Americana thing that's gone.
Just lovely when you come and you talk about things that we never, ever expected.
You probably lost all your listeners in the time.
No, not at all. We'll take a break.
I'm afraid you have.
We'll take a break. Steve Sands will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, these are Jackie and the Treehorns. This is a track called If They Only Knew. It's a song about secrets. Everyone has them. For instance, how is Carville really doing so well on his Blue Plate specials? Or does Ari Melba really not know who you are? The new album is available on all music services, including Spotify and Apple Music. Those who enjoy our new music can see us, Jackie and the Treehorns, on Friday, March 24th at The Pocket in Washington, D.C. I'm unfamiliar with The Pocket.
As am I.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for your continued support of original music. I wholeheartedly agree with Michael Granberry that artists like us are so appreciative of the opportunity you give us to reach a broader audience. Happy to do it.
I love the drums on that song you played. It's fun. Like, my first thought was, what amazing drums. And then you said, this is sent in by the drummer.
Yeah, this is the drummer, Brian Gibson.
Very cool.
Michael,
sound.
If people like Jackie and the Treehorns want to send in their music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And Jackie and the Treehorns at the moment play in Steve Sands. And I have to tell you, I got home yesterday from walking the dog about 6:20, and Tiger was on 14 or 15, whatever it was, and he wasn't playing all that well. He was plus one at the time, and I watched him, as I'm sure you watched him, birdie 16, 17, and 18. I think all three. I think Justin Thomas and Rory, I think they all birdied 18. I watched him birdie 16, 17, and 18, and I watched him smile, and I thought, even if he doesn't make the cut, what a great ending of the first round, right?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, it doesn't even matter if you're a Tiger fan. If you're just a golf fan, or even better yet, if you're just a sports fan, like to see the best players in the world compete at whatever sport it is, it was nice to see him get back there and get after it. Last time we saw him play was the PNC Championship. That's, you know, the father's son with his son Charlie, and he was in a golf cart. That's not really a competition in his regard, that he regards as a massive competition. But the Open Championship at St. Andrews is the last time we saw him, and, you know, it wasn't pretty. And to watch him get back out there and compete and watch him have the joy of competing was really, really tantalizing. It was a lot of fun to watch. I enjoyed it.
Until that moment, or those moments, it looked grim. His face looked grim. It looked like, man, I'm hurting. My body is hurting me. And then there was that smile. What is your sense of him physically? Michael was pointing out to me this morning that his ball speed is on the drive is the same as Rory's.
He was around 178 to 180.
So well, what do you think?
When he drives the golf ball beyond where Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy are putting the golf ball, that's saying something about his golf swing. I don't think anybody in this sport is questioning whether or not he can play. There's no question about his swing speed, his ball speed, his chipping ability, his pitching ability. His iron play has always been outstanding, and his putting has been ridiculous throughout his career. Clearly, it has waned a little bit as he's gotten into his late 40s. But his competitive drive, his ability to swing the golf club, none of that is in question. The question, Tony, is, and that's what's so curious about today, He played late in the afternoon yesterday. Now he turns right around and plays early
and it's cold.
In the morning.
It's cold.
It's going to be chilly.
Yeah.
It's a quick turnaround, and it'll be a challenge for him. And this is only through 36 holes if he finishes the 18 today. Then he's got to do it two more days. The question is, can that ankle, can that leg hold up over the course of walking 72 holes? This is one of the great debates in sports. Is golf really a sport? Is golf athletic? Well, you've got to walk it. You've got to be able to get through four straight days. You cannot take a golf cart on the PGA Tour, and that's the biggest challenge for Tiger. The golf part is not the biggest challenge. The biggest challenge for him is the physical nature of the sport, and also shaking off that rust. And he's got a lot of rust on his game, but it sure didn't look like it yesterday late in the round. It did look like it in the middle stages, but not in those last three holes. He was money those last three holes.
So if I'm listening to you correctly, you're unlike me, you're not going to be surprised if he makes the cut, whereas I am going to be surprised if he makes the cut.
Yeah, I was going to be surprised if he made the cut. Now I would be surprised if he didn't make the cut because he shot 269 yesterday. He should be able to, if he's able to physically handle today's round and all of the things that go with it this morning out in Los Angeles, then I think he should be able to make the cut. I was not in the camp of him making the cut going into the week, but after seeing him finish yesterday, yeah, I can see him willing himself into the weekend. I do not think he's going to put himself in contention to win. But what's the goal? He will always tell you outwardly that his goal is to win.
Yeah.
Now, come on now. There's not a person on the planet, even the biggest Tiger fan, who thought coming into the week that he would be able to give himself a chance to win. I think making the cut is a great goal.
And we expect to see him in the Masters, right? We definitely expect to see him in the Masters.
Yeah, I cannot imagine, unless there's a physical ailment like that, Plesher Fanny. What is that? What Plesher Fanny? I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
The Plesher, whatever.
Plantar.
Plantar fasciitis.
Plantar fasciitis, thank you. Sorry, I'm not a doctor. So that was a big, big issue with him around Thanksgiving in December. If you remember, Tony, one of the last times we spoke on the air, not just off, but he was going to play in the Hero World Challenge, and he couldn't do it because of that. Then he played, and he limped around a lot at the PNC Championship, but he really wanted to play with his son, Charlie. Unless there's a physical ailment, I think he's going to play again before the Masters. He could play at Bay Hill, where he's had a lot of success. He's won the Players' Championship. He knows how big of a deal that title is and that event is to the PGA Tour. I expect him, if he's healthy, I expect him to play at least one more time before Augusta, and without question, he will put the peg in the ground at the Masters, unless there's a physical ailment.
And in terms of stress tests, Riviera with the elevation changes is your best, you know, barometer to see how he can handle those hills
at Augusta. Yeah.
Yeah, no question. Did you see him? I don't know if you saw the beginning of the telecast. I thought it was really interesting watching him walk down number one. Anybody who's ever seen Riviera in person or on television knows, as Michael just alluded to, there are a couple of serious elevation changes.
One and 18.
On number one, you go straight down. At 18, you go straight back up. And when he walked down that path to go hit his second shot on the first tee, you could see him walking very gingerly coming down. I'll tell you another thing that was really interesting. One of the great sounds in golf, it's very similar to in basketball, the old days of hearing the sneakers squeaking on the hardwood. Mm. One of the great sounds in golf is that crunching sound of nails, of not soft spikes on guys' shoes when they're walking on a cart path. Tiger has always famously worn spikes and not soft spikes. He's always had that kind of crunch, crunch, crunch when he walks. Wasn't wearing them yesterday. And that's because you've got to be able to get up and down those hills and not slide a little bit, especially when you're walking down number one on that cart path. So he's made some adjustments, very subtle adjustments, things that no one would think about. But all of this is to give himself the opportunity to get another green jacket, which would tie Jack Nicklaus at six. That's why he's playing right now. He wants to get himself ready for a run at Augusta.
Have you paid attention to and seen the Netflix series on golf, the one that's sort of similar to the one on Formula One racing?
Yeah, it's pretty hard not to if you do what we do for a living.
Right.
Especially, I've done all sports. I've been very lucky in my life to do all sports, but I do mainly golf now, obviously. And it's been a huge,
huge, not only initiative by the PGA Tour and by Netflix, but it's also been something that in the sport, everybody was looking forward to seeing how it was going to not just compare to the Formula One one, but just to see if, you know, the general audience, not just the golf audience, would kind of soak in being allowed into these guys' lives. And it's been a pretty big hit so far the last couple of days.
So I wanted to ask about this because it's sort of like the football series, the training camp series, where you have all access, complete all access. Golfers, you know, they're individuals. Have they all been cooperative, or have some said, get these people out of here, I'm not doing this?
For the most part, when the PGA Tour was approached by Netflix, by the producers of Full Swing, for the most part, everybody was, you know, really, really excited about it. I think there were a couple of no's, but there are more, way more players saying yes and way more players wanting that kind of spotlight shown on them. I think it was off to a great start with some of the guys they got. And boy, you talk about, I mean, think about what Liz does for a living in journalism and what you did all your life in journalism. Just imagine being able to get inside these guys' lives. Yeah. And what's fascinating to me is as an individual sport, you know, it's so different than the team aspect. There's no locker room mentality. You know, the thinking that all golfers are dorks and athletes are cool because it's such an individual sport, I think this is kind of unveiling a little bit and letting the world come in to see that these guys actually are regular human beings. And by the way, what a year to do it. You got LIV going on in the spring. You got the players going back and forth. If you've seen any of the Netflix show Full Swing, they dive deep into the LIV versus PGA Tour thing. And of all the years for Netflix to have the access to the best players in the world on and off the golf course, last year was a heck of a year to do it, considering all the things that went on in the sport.
It's an important thing. The HBO series Hard Knocks, well, I remember when I saw the first episode, I went, oh, my God, I can't believe this. I can't believe that the teams would be cooperative with this. Cannot believe it. Because they had access to things that sports writers don't have access to, and sports writers right. have a lot of access in training camps and stuff like that. So I think cooperation is a very big deal, and if they're going to do it, so it's not just the PGA Tour, they're doing it with the Saudi Tour as well?
Well, they got permission by the LIV Golf to go to some of those events and show some of that.
Right.
They show some of that video. It is about the PGA Tour. It's
okay.
about the PGA Tour players, but because of the timeline, Tony, when they interviewed all of these guys, and by the way, some of the golf writers, there aren't a lot of them left, but some of the golf writers, the prominent golf writers, and you had one of them on a couple of weeks ago, Doug Ferguson.
Brandon,
and he's a very, very good writer. He's the best golf writer, in my opinion. He's been doing it for so long. He's fantastic at what he does. And he did a great job on your show. It was a lot of fun listening to him. Some of those guys are like, wait a second. We have all the access in the world here, but we don't have anything close
that's
to
right.
what these guys are allowing Full Swing to have. And that's been an interesting conversation in and around golf circles. But, you know, look, I think it's great to see people we root for or root against in sports and find out what they're actually like as human beings and not just the performers that they are on whatever stage it is. And I think the more access, the better. You know, at some point, obviously, you take a step back and don't let anybody all the way in. But I think it's really cool when athletes open up, you know, to people, you know, who do this for a living and get to show the audience, you know, what they're like, who they're rooting for, not just the athlete in them. And I think it's really cool that these guys allowed that access.
I'll just get you out of here on this. I won't even go into what Rory is saying lately because I'm not completely convinced of it. But I want to go back to Tiger and what you said about 1 and 18. I think it was Max Homa who said, if he needs it, we'll carry him down 1 and we'll carry him up 18. Mm-hmm. There's nobody anymore who is Tiger's rival now. They all worship Tiger, right? I mean, they love Tiger Woods, or am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right. Tiger famously as a kid used to have a poster of Jack Nicklaus on his wall. Kind of like people who are my age, we used to have that. You remember the Supreme Court poster of all the great NBA players
yes.
wearing the black robes
yep.
and that kind of thing? You know, everybody has
I figured you for a Farrah Fawcett.
I was thinking
But go ahead.
By the way, the Farrah Fawcett in the red bathing suit was certainly on Stephen Sands' wall.
Okay.
I can promise you that.
Yeah.
Old Bonnie Sands used to wonder why I had that poster on the wall on 31st Street. But anyway, we digress. Here's the thing. Everybody has their guy. Everybody has their team, and in individual sports, everybody has their guy or their girl, whatever it is that you enjoy. And in golf, these guys worship Tiger, as you said. These guys grew up wanting to be Tiger, and then they made it to the PGA Tour and got to compete against him a little bit. And then all the things that have transpired in Tiger's life on and off the golf course, what's happened to him as he's aged is – and he became a father, and all these things that have happened to him in his life, he's allowed these guys in. I've said this to you before, Tony. What was interesting about following Tiger when I first started doing golf is he would beat the brains out of Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson, DJ Singh, David Duval. He wasn't friends with any of them. He was an assassin out there. Well, that was when he was a young man in his 20s. Now that he's aged a bit and he has way more perspective on life than he ever even probably dreamed he would have back then when everything was going so well. Now the guys who are the best players in the world, Justin Thomas, one of his best friends in the whole world, a brother to him. And Rory McIlroy is very close with him. And a lot of the young guys are close with him. And that's because Tiger has allowed them into his life. Very similar to how the PGA Tour players have allowed Full Swing and Netflix into their lives. He's allowed those kids, these kids, today's best players, into their lives. So not only are they competing against the guy they worshipped and still worship, they get to be friends with him and get to know him. And that's a really special thing, especially in this sport, especially in an individual sport. Liz does a lot of tennis, and obviously I do a lot of golf. And I think that, you know, when these guys get close, they still want to beat their brains in. That's the best part, is that they're not just giving it to Tiger. They want Tiger to compete, and they want Tiger to play well, but they also want to, you know, crush him, you know, when they have a chance to. And I think that's a really cool thing about sports.
Now, that's good. Let's get to the heart of this thing. When is the next Springsteen concert that you and Liz are going to?
Well, Liz and I, listen, I don't mean to leave Jeannie out of this conversation because I love Jeannie.
I do, too.
Liz and I have this ridiculous kinship of Bruce Springsteen and the spirit that is Bruce and the E Street Band. And I think we're going to get together in Greensboro, Liz.
I mean, well, that's where our paths converge. It's Greensboro. And so I don't know if you will have time for me, but I will be texting you.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Come on. One of the greatest joys of my life is walking into an Olympic lobby and seeing Liz Clark there and being able to raise a glass.
Remember
Liz,
that.
Let's have a conversation. Of course I remember
it's
that.
It's wonderful. This makes me so happy.
If you have to do curling and water polo and all these weird sports during the Olympics, you might as well have a drink with Liz Clark.
I think that was South Korea.
It was Pyeongchang.
Thank you.
Yes, it was.
As we drop Asian cities for 500. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Steve.
All right, Tony, be good. Jeannie, Liz, Michael.
Bye, Steve.
Care. Bye, Steve.
Steve Sands, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We'll come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Cigna struggled with their master plan. They will take your cash each month and watch a stack. There is no hope you'll be covered. They will not pay for your MRI or even for steroid injections. Tony White. talking 8 to 9. Do they not know you? A big cheese on PTI. They should really schmooze, but what do they choose to do? To be sleazy with our guy.
How good
genius
is Kirsten Onstead?
Brings tears to your eyes.
How good is Kirsten Onstead?
Unbelievable.
Come on.
Just the best.
Wow.
Yes.
And that is apparently an Adele song.
Yes.
And I called Michael the other day.
You must have heard the voicemail.
I was driving home, and I said, and I left him a voicemail, and then we talked about it. I said, I know Taylor Swift is really good, and everybody thinks she's like the biggest star in the world. I said, I just heard two songs by Adele. I said, Adele's really great, isn't she? And you said they were the two biggest ones.
They're sort of parallel in their storytelling with the songs and how these songs are so true to the voices that they both carry. I mean, Adele's a powerhouse singer.
Wow.
But you look at the way she produces the album and where it comes in, where she is in her own personal life. It's must listen.
Do you listen to Adele? I mean, that's all new to me.
Oh, Adele, yeah. Taylor Swift, I have to say, I'm completely out of the Taylor Swift loop. I could not pick out one song of hers. I know
this she's huge.
Really old, but.
Yeah.
I know James Taylor. Is it similar music?
That's great. Do the Bethesda Bagel ad.
Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say nothing's riding on this except the First Amendment to the Constitution, freedom of the press, and maybe the future of a country. Not that any of that matters, but if you guys F up again, I'm going to get mad. Benjamin Crowenshield Bradley.
So
thanks to our guest today, Steve Sands. Thanks today to the sponsors, Grammarly and Liquid IV. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. Great thanks to KJ on that. From Ken Vastolo. I thought someone else would have chimed in on this by now, but as an Italian-American, I feel I must correct your misconceptions about gelato. Gelato has no dairy in it. You were thinking of sorbet or sorbetto in Italian, which has no dairy. Talenti also makes sorbet, so be careful when shopping for gelato. Gelato contains less air than regular ice cream, so it is intensely flavorful and has a smooth, velvety texture. Gelato is usually lower in fat compared to regular ice cream, since it contains more milk and less cream. I prefer gelato to ice cream because it's a bit healthier, less fat, but actually has more flavor. I highly recommend Talenti Double Dark Chocolate Gelato. A 2/3 cup serving has 15 grams of fat and 320 calories, while Häagen-Dazs Double Belgian Chocolate Chip Ice Cream, which I have in my freezer, its 2/3 cup serving has 27 grams of fat and 420 calories, but the Talenti has all the rich dark chocolate flavor of the Häagen-Dazs. Note that I am not related to Talenti in any way except as a customer. Last week, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and I took a trip to Corning, New York. I've been there. Mm-hmm. We drove through Binghamton on our way there. We looked, but there isn't even a plaque or a signpost or a statue in that town. What would Hyman Roth think? It's a shanda. If that isn't enough, our dog Sam ate an entire head of raw broccoli, a full container of cherry tomatoes, and a prime porterhouse steak. Though not all on the same day, our dog Hunter only eats deer poop. He's a Chaza. We may name him Saliza. Fondly yours, KV in Delmar, New York, just south of Albany.
That's great.
Here we return to the same thing from John Carnes in White Plains, Maryland. Long time, back to Andy Poley in the Snackdown shows. First time. Seems like you confused gelato with sorbet on the show. Having a good stock of Talenti in my freezer, I can attest that among the top ingredients in their delicious coffee chocolate chip gelato are both milk and cream. For sorbet, the number one ingredient is indeed water. According to Al Gore's internet, gelato is the Italian term for all kinds of ice cream. Where are you on gelato?
You know, I don't eat ice cream.
You don't?
I have ice cream when people come over, and I put it on some dessert of some. I have 2 pints of ice cream in my freezer right now that are virtually untouched.
You don't eat ice cream?
I mean,
but you're
dairy.
A dessert person?
I'm not a dessert person. I'm like my weakness.
Pizza.
Pizza and Fritos.
Pizza. And so if you could get a Frito covered pizza.
No, I would not. But as you know, I'll take any pizza, as long as it's hot and cheesy.
All right, from Bobby Godfrey. There is indeed a story, possibly apocryphal, about Cleopatra and an asp. but Cleopatra allowed the asp to bite her to end her life.
Yes.
The story you are thinking of is the fable of the scorpion and the frog, in which the frog promises to carry the scorpion across a river, but worries the scorpion will sting him. The scorpion promises not to sting, pointing out that doing so would doom them both, as the scorpion cannot swim. Still midway across, the scorpion stings the frog, and as they both drown, the frog asks why, to which the scorpion responds, "It is in my nature." And he also says, P.S., we had, and he was on Chuck and Roxy episode 12. What number were you on?
I think it was 5002.
It was not.
Yeah, who was up there, yeah.
Okay. P.S.
But it was great. It was fun.
We had the Great Zucchini, Laura Little's podcast, episode 146. The Great Zucchini was on.
How about that?
Perform at our son Calvin's fifth birthday party over the weekend. I was thrilled to greet him with a hearty
cheese. Humble brag.
He was, as you would expect. Excellent.
Can't even get him for this July.
From Jarrett Seberg. Okay, this is just weird. LeBron's age, 38 years old. Kareem's record, 38 years old. The record-breaking point, 38,388. Points scored when he broke it, 38. Plus Tuesday, the night James broke the record, was the 38th day of the year. That is weird.
That is.
Thank you, Jared. Here's more stuff. Patrick Sitter in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Memorable numbers. 7, the number of Super Bowl titles won by Tom Brady. 10, the questionable handicap of Aaron Rodgers. 11, the number of NBA championships won by Bill Russell. 100, the number of points scored in a single game by Will Chamberlain. 150, the number of Bruce Springsteen concerts attended by Steve Sands. That Sandsy never thought he'd be included in such an illustrious group. From Tom Pace in Lakewood, Ohio. Mike from Powhatan, Virginia, who wrote to say he dumped a girl in high school for having too many digits in her phone number, got me thinking about the most petty reason I dumped someone. A girl in college I dated lived each summer with her parents on the family farm in the middle of nowhere. It was a 30-minute drive on a badly lit 2-lane country road from my place to hers. Well, you should have gone with Dale Earnhardt. One night after dropping her off, I nearly struck a deer. That's it, I thought. No more of this. I called the next day to say we need to talk. I was dumped by people. I never dumped anyone. Joe Rudden from Mount Airy. I'd like to throw my hat in the ring for the worst date ever. May 19th, 2001. Technically, it wasn't a date. It was just my wedding. I feel like, though, this qualifies me in the spirit.
Oh, no.
By the way, here's another one from Patrick Sitter. My wife is asking me why I just traded in our brand new Grand Wagoneer for a Jeep Cherokee. Please help. She's not buying the grill explanation. No, it's true.
Yeah.
Have you seen, isn't the Jeep grill one of the most recognizable in all of cars? You see a Jeep, a Jeep drives towards you, you know by the grill, and the Grand Wagoneer doesn't have the grill. Doesn't have it. Mitch Bangert. Shot coffee out of my nose. You and Pablo talking about Chambers of Darkness, Rogers, blah, blah. Pablo says, yeah, this stuff is trending. You say, I like lamb chops. I'm old. I also like lamb chops. Yes, I like lamb chops. From Dave Arnold in Broomall, Pennsylvania. That's near Philadelphia, isn't it? Broomall. Love seeing the famous Jackie Gleason photo behind you on PTI last week, but did he hit it to the moon? You can't do that show anymore.
No.
Bang, zoom. You can't do it.
Oh,
there's so
true.
Many things you can't do. True. You just, right?
Right.
Can't do it. From Jacob in Bethesda, first time, long time. Relatively recently, the dental practice I went to was sold. I simply went to the new dentist who took it over. She found at minimum 8 cavities in my mouth and basically said she didn't think the old dentist was doing anything for years. I hate going to the dentist now. It used to be so easy when they weren't doing anything. From Tim Wildsmith, our singer from Nashville.
Yeah, we love Tim. Yeah, he's very talented.
I don't have a song for you today, but I felt compelled to write in after hearing that Chuck and Roxy are giving out gift bags to guests on their show. I didn't get a gift bag, and I was on episode 133 and episode 192. Please tell Chuck and Roxy did it. Did you get a gift bag?
No, I didn't. But I was 5002, so they might have run out of bling by then.
I did not realize until you read Tony Beeson's email that you were one of the few people other than my parents who uses my full name. My nickname, Roop, rhymes with poop. Roop Sharma, Lebanon, Ohio. From Ken Sands, but not Steve Sands.
Not Steve Sands.
Ken Sands in Forest Hills in Washington. Close to here. After reading my email on Wednesday's podcast, you wonder whether I might be related to Steve Sands. I suppose it's possible we're distantly related. Ask him if he comes from a long line of pasty white Englishmen and a couple of cranky Germans. Think King Charles. I'll hang up and listen. And from Carlton Conley, I know this is too long and will never make it past Nigel's review, but here goes anyway. I love the conversation you had with Michael Granberry and the history of the Dallas Cowboys. I was born in 1956 and I lived in Fort Worth and also went to a school where we walked to River Oak Boulevard and waved when John Kennedy's motorcade came out of Carswell Air Force Base and drove into the city. My father was a minor league baseball player and loved sports and became immediately a Cowboys fan in 1960. So I grew up watching the team on Sundays. At that time, there was still the blackout rule. And early on, the team didn't sell out. So we would drive to Waco, 100 miles away, eat shrimp cocktail in what I assumed was a fancy restaurant, and then watch the game from a motel room. No robes at all. Later, we had the 50-foot tower so you could pick up the broadcast from 100 miles away at the house. First game I ever went to see live in person was in the Cotton Bowl. And the last 2 years, I was at TCU. I played saxophone, much better than a French horn. Subtle, not so subtle shot at Chuck Todd. In the cowboy band in the stadium with a hole in the roof. I cried both times they lost to Green Bay, but will never forget the moments watching those games with my father, who died way too early. Sorry he missed the next two generations of Cowboys. I'm buying the book, and thanks for the countless number of years I've laughed and loved your show and shows you've been on, and hope you don't die soon. I still am the official TK show reporter from Belgrade, Serbia, and tell Michael it seems to rain here every day this time of year, and all your fans want you to podcast 7 days a week.
Oh, how nice.
That's beautiful.
If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
They all get involved, and they all got their gear all ready, and so they're going to be all colored up in the maroon and black.
Oh, that's
and
idiot.
You're an idiot.